the cries of the filth they bring. He flees with the terror of all tiny things.
So, another cut from Imaginary Heaven. A CD that was produced almost 20 years ago. In 1997, it came out. Ian Hepburn was the driving force behind it, and a couple of other singers. Louise, you know their names?
Yeah, it was Nina Loretto and
Carrie Steele.
And the two young women were young women. They were, I think, just finishing off high school and going on to university. And so they did come back and perform and do various concerts. I think I even saw them perform in Ottawa at the Museum of Civilization, if I'm not mistaken, on a Saturday afternoon one time. But, you know, they were growing and going in different directions, and so the group kind of disbanded.
An amicable
split up. But beautiful singers, though.
Anyway, it turns out that Ian had a stash of these CDs, and he thought it's an opportunity to raise some funds for the program he's involved in now over at PCPS, doing healing harps and restorative drums. They're working with some of the kids there that have a bit of attention deficit or challenges that are getting in the way of their learning. So they do some really interesting programming with those kids, and based on music, harps and drums, and are having wonderful results. So it's a fundraiser. Pop into the review. We have some copies of this beautiful CD. It's called Christmas Comes in Darkness, Imaginary Heaven. And all of the proceeds are going to that program, the healing drums, healing harps and restorative drums. Anyhow, Rini has joined us in the studio. Hi, Rini.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in.
It's lovely to be here again.
Yeah. This is your third time, I think, on the show. You're becoming a regular. You maybe should just show up every week and be a sidekick here, just like Ed McMahon used to be on the Johnny Carson show. Here's Johnny. Here's Rini.
I remember.
That's right, Ed.
You're my sidekick.
No, but that's what's his name? You say that's
right.
Yeah,
that's right. He would laugh at all the right places, right? That's what he was. Johnny liked him for that. Anyhow, you're here to tell us about preparations, how preparations are going for Art Scramble, the second annual.
The second, yeah.
Which is, congratulations on that. The first one was
and
so
better
successful.
Even.
Bigger and better?
Bigger? I don't
Not
know.
Not necessarily.
Bigger will depend upon whether we have more people. We do have more artwork, but
okay.
What's wonderful is the quality of the work that came this year.
Okay.
Because it's all donated, of course. Right. It's all artists choosing to give their work.
Yeah.
I mean, we even received some work from people who have not even yet shown at the gallery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if that's the reputation growing or what.
But must be.
We have...
they want to be a part of it, of a successful event.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Fantastic.
I mean, I'm delighted by the variety. So we have more variety this year than we had last year.
So the reputation of the event is getting out there, and people mm-hmm. want to be a part of that. It's excellent. So give mm-hmm. us an overview of how the event works. It's quite a unique...
It's really fun. When you buy the ticket for $25, this also gets you a free membership for 1 year if you're a new member.
Mm-hmm.
You walk in the door and you're given one of those tickets, that splits in two. You receive half, it's got your number on it. The other half goes into a big bottle. You then have a half hour to mingle, socialize. There's lots of lovely food. We really make an effort to make the food special, not just the kind of ordinary food we have for a vernissage. And this year, Reg Harden has agreed once again to be our bartender.
Yeah. He does a bang-up job.
With the mostest. Oh, my God,
yeah,
yes.
He wears his black bow tie, and he's all spiffed
up. He's fabulous.
Yeah.
So, and then you have about a half hour to walk around. There will be one wall which is devoted exclusively to the Art Scramble work, and every one of the works will have a number on it. You'll receive a piece of paper, and you can go around and look at each piece closely, decide which ones you like, write down the numbers of your favorite pieces. And then, after a little bit of a welcome, I will reach into that bottle and start pulling numbers.
Start drawing numbers. Okay.
That's the lady luck part.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Depending upon when your number's chosen, if you're the first one chosen, I mean, they're all there.
Right.
And then, you know, if it's like last year, I mean, it was just quite hilarious. It was like, oh, no, that was the one I wanted. Or, oh, wow, this is a great. So it's really quite animated.
Yeah.
You don't have long. That's the scramble part. I mean, that said,
you have to be organized. You have to have you're supposed to write down your hit list and pay attention so that when your number comes up, you know where you're going to go.
And you got to follow closely because your first choice is gone, your second choice is gone.
Yeah.
You got
to
know.
You have to pay attention.
Yeah, which one's still available.
You can always dance up to the wall again if you need to, but you know, that's the whole point.
You can't linger too long because the
clock's ticking. No, because you get in the way kind of thing.
That's right.
And it's ticking.
You don't want to stop the momentum.
But there are a couple changes. One of the changes is, and these were all changes based, interestingly enough, on feedback that we got from people who attended the event last year. So one of the changes is that last year, when someone perhaps fell sick or wanted to contribute to this fundraiser but couldn't attend, they appointed a proxy.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And several people actually commented that it was a little frustrating to be the one standing there. It was one thing if I pull the number out and you walk up, but if two or three times someone walks up and that person is not even there, it became frustrating. So what we did to at least give priority to the people who are actually physically present is we said, okay, everyone who's physically present will choose first. And then all the people who are proxying for those who cannot will choose, I'll pull their numbers second.
Uh-huh.
Now, you have to know that we specifically count the number of pieces that we have, and then we pull back the number of tickets to at least 20 less than the number of tickets we sold.
Okay.
So that when that last person
allow for
goes
lots
up.
Of choice.
Well, you don't want the last person to walk up to the wall and feel
one
there's
choice.
Only, three would be inadequate.
Yeah.
20.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
20.
That's
there
quite
will
generous.
Be 20 pieces left on the wall. Well, because otherwise you feel like you kind of got the booby prize, which would be dreadful.
So, but there are no booby prizes. All
truly,
of the pieces
are
just
are
fantastic.
No. I mean, this year, I tell you, I'm actually contemplating buying a ticket myself because I can't believe how good some of the stuff
wow.
is. I loved it that we had a lot more this year. Last year, we seemed to be heavier on photography. This year, no. We have lots of oils, watercolors, lithographs, glass, stained glass, jewelry.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a really tremendous variety of mediums this year, so that's really exciting. And as I say, the quality is excellent. So Jessica, everyone knows Jessica Sarazan, who's our curator, and Mark Greenwald and I spent, as well as Erica Taylor, spent the better part of yesterday just preparing the works because everything has to be mounted and
mm-hmm. right.
put in the jackets and numbered. And so tomorrow we go to hang it, which is always exciting.
Yeah.
And then Saturday,
The big event,
and I do urge people to come at 2:00 because
you need
some
the time.
Need some time to look things over as well as enjoy yourself and eat. And we are also holding back some tickets so that there will be tickets at the door. How many, I don't know, but for sure there will be tickets for sale at the door. So there is one other change. Last year, you may remember, it was packed. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we were like squished in there. So in order to give, and I don't know, maybe only about half those people were actually purchasing the art. So in order to put the emphasis on those purchasing the art, what we said is you're welcome to bring someone with to help you choose. But if they don't want to buy something, we will simply ask $10 at the door and thank that person by giving them a complimentary glass of wine.
Okay.
But
so they get
just,
they get entry and they get they
yeah.
Get,
I know there was a lot of curiosity
yeah,
last year.
Eat.
I know I kept bumping into people that said, "Oh, I just came to see how it worked." But you could, you know.
But you're a body in a very tiny space.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like sardines in there.
Exactly. But we did arrange it differently this year in order to have a few more chairs because there were people who really needed to sit down.
Yes.
And so in order to assist those people, mm-hmm. we put it on a different wall.
I say it was like sardines, but it was really convivial. I mean, it was fun. And people were
like
having a good time.
It was like being at an auction.
That's right. It was a really good energy and nobody was frustrated or feeling.
It goes fast.
Oh, yeah. It goes fast. And the other interesting thing I just wanted to jump in here is I had never been to one before, but a few people were in the know, and some people had 2 and 3 tickets, and they went off with 3 pieces of art. You know, they had 3 tickets, and they were waiting for one of their 3 numbers to come up, and I thought, why didn't I think of that? You know, because you stand there with one crummy number, you could have 4 and get 4 gifts for Christmas or whatever.
I have to tell you, it really is an amazing deal. I look at what's on the wall, and as an artist myself, and I have multiple pieces in the show as well, as do some of the others in the gallery, but you couldn't buy those pieces for
$25. No, that's just it. You can't.
You really couldn't. Yeah. No. You really, really couldn't.
An amazing opportunity, I think so. And a really good way to support the local art gallery and make sure that it's successful and continues on, because
Absolutely.
That's a big part of why you stepped up to organize this event, to make sure
I have
that
to put in a plug.
Yeah, go for it.
I really want to thank Scotiabank because not only are they, you know, as they do for so many others, matching our funds
up to $5,000.
I am just, I'm awed by what that bank does for this community.
It's over $60,000 a year.
And they provide volunteers to work on the event. I mean, that's a big part of it. That's so impressive.
Thank you to everyone at the bank and to Sylvain Labrie. I am really grateful to them.
They're really doing a lot of good work.
So speaking of Scotiabank, you can get tickets for Art Scramble at Scotiabank?
Yes, you can, as well as the Review.
Here at the Review, 76 Main Street East. And Scotiabank, of course, is just across the street
from the 55 Main Street.
55 Main Street East in Van Cleek Hill. Are those the two places where you can get tickets?
Yes, they are,
and
other than at the door. But if you know anyone who's
members
on the board,
of Arbor Gallery.
Myself, Mark Greenwald, Dana Fisher, Jessica Sarazen.
We have a pair of tickets. If anybody wants them, we'll sell them a pair of tickets.
Yeah.
So if you know anybody that's connected with their Arbor Gallery, artists or members, they'll likely have some tickets they'd be happy to sell to you. $25, it's a really great, great bargain. And
My number in the Review article this week. So mm-hmm. if someone, you know, is really desperate and they want to reserve tickets to make sure they're at the door or something, please feel free just to call.
Okay, that's good too. And give us that number. I remember it's 1616, isn't it?
That's it. Sweet 16. Yes, but I haven't been in a very long time, but yes.
613-678-1616 to reach Rini Marks if you want to reserve tickets for this wonderful event happening at Arbor Gallery on Saturday, November 29th, my son's
from
birthday.
From 2 until 4 p.m.
From 2 till 4, just two short hours. It's going to be a scramble, an art scramble.
With great food.
Yes, great food, great wine, great art, a great company, actually, and a great event. Thanks, Rini, for coming in. Thanks for organizing it.
Thank you so much.
And donating so much time and effort to making this another successful event, I'm sure. And thanks for coming in to promote it.
Thank you.
Okay, Rini, thanks. So in a second, we're going to continue Van Cleek FM here on the airwaves, coming to you live from 76 Main Street East in Van Cleek Hill, the offices of the Review newspaper. In a moment, Louise Sproul is going to do an interview with Roland Robert. Roland has written a wonderful book that Louise read quite quickly, I might say, Lake of Hidden Secrets. And they're going to discuss this book and its plot and its inspiration and its mysteries, I guess.
No spoilers.
No spoilers, eh? Okay. As soon as we listen to this piece by Imaginary Heaven, yet another cut from the CD Imaginary Heaven.
Bye.
There we go. Another cut from Imaginary Heaven's CD called Christmas Comes in Darkness. And that particular cut was Patapan, cut number 7. Beautiful, beautiful. We're just saying how timeless that music is. It never really goes out of style. It's just full of life and energy and mystery, it seems. Anyway, Louise, over to you.
All right. I'm really pleased to welcome Roland Robert into the studio here at The Review this evening. Welcome.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
Oh, that's great. Roland has written a book called Lake of Hidden Secrets. And you can often meet him at the Banglicill Farmers Market, where he's there autographing his book. But you go there some Saturdays, don't you?
Yes, I go there every second Saturday and sometimes in between as well.
Okay. What's it like to sit at a table and sign your book or hope that people come along to buy your book?
Well, it's fun. I enjoy it. I like to see people come and I like to see them come back and tell me that they either enjoyed it or they didn't. But
right.
But it's fun to have them come and autograph, and I get to autograph the book.
I have to say that you're really conversational. I mean, walking past the table, I remember we connected, you know, and you were just interested in talking. I mean, you weren't aggressively peddling your book or anything. You're just reaching out and saying, how you doing and what's up? And
yeah, I like talking to people.
Yeah, you can tell you're a people person. People. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm having a struggle here because I read this book and I read it really quickly, but the book is written from the perspective of a woman. And now I'm meeting you and you're sitting here as a man. Like I felt that the voice was really more of the female, and I just was, where does that come from when you write? How do you do that?
Well, I would have to put it partially anyway to the fact that I'm was raised in a military family. My dad was in the Navy and he was mostly gone.
Right.
So I would have to put it to the fact of being raised by my mother. And so I had a lot of female influences.
You have an understanding of what they're thinking.
And my mother was the type who always helped everybody. And so I got a lot of influence there, too.
Right.
So
kind of like she
would help other women who were lonely or something because their husbands were gone to sea.
Oh, yeah.
And they would always come and talk to my mom. Mm. And so I guess that's where I got a lot of it.
And I wanted to ask you, too, it did say in your bio on the back of the book that, you know, you moved around a lot. And often writers who are kind of solitary or there's something that makes people turn to writing. And I'm wondering if maybe that was the case for you. You know, as a child, was it hard to, you go to a new community, you kind of have to start meeting kids. It's often easier to read books or to turn to writing.
Yeah, it was very hard for me. I was sort of shy and to go from one school to the other and you meet friends, but then either you move or they move. So you wound up, you know, just staying to yourself, reading books. And I turned to writing little things because I could bring that with me.
Yeah.
So I always had that with me.
And did you bring your writing to school and share it, or was that something you kind of kept to yourself?
Not in the beginning. I kept it to myself pretty well till about the seventh grade.
Right.
Yeah.
And were there writers that inspired you back then, or was it just, were you writing about yourself? Or
no, I was just writing to write, whatever came to my mind. I tried to write songs, I tried to write poetry, I tried to write little stories, I made up little plays, whatever it struck me to do.
And is this your first book?
That's my first published book, yes.
Okay.
I wrote other little books before, but never went to the publishers with them.
Okay. All right. Well, this one's quite substantial, Lake of Hidden Secrets, and it's got a really interesting storyline. And I read a lot, and you read a lot too, and you know what it's like if you start reading a mystery, and the first little clue they throw out there, you've solved it. And that wasn't the case with this book. Like you, I'm not going to give anything away here, but you had me till the very end. And I just wondered was there an inspiration in particular for this story, or was it something sort of swirling around in your mind that you...
The original inspiration came from an essay I wrote in actually back in 1980, and the essay is somewhere in the book. And that's all I'm going to say about the essay.
Okay.
But...
Would there be a way of giving us a little synopsis of the story without giving anything away? Can you give sort of a little overview of how the story goes? I don't know, either the Louise the reader or Roland the author. What's the synopsis of the story? Like, there's a medical person that takes a medical leave of absence, and
yes, she's the heroine. Dr. Tracy Miller is a reluctant surgeon, who just wants to be close to her father, who is a renowned surgeon. And then she decides to become what she really wanted to be, a Marcus Wellaby-type family doctor. And she goes out into the country, and then from there she falls in love, but then falls into trouble as well. And... that's where the mystery of the hidden lake, the mystery of the lake comes in.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how much more I want to tell without giving it away.
Yeah. So that sort of gives you the overview of the layout of who the characters are, and
And it's really, I mean, she's really kind of burned out and hasn't had a holiday in a long time, and so all these pieces seem to fall into place, and she's got an opportunity.
And she has a hard time dealing with death. And every time a patient dies on her table, she can't get past that. And they keep coming back to haunt her. So she has to get away from that.
Right. And when you were, like, how long did it take you to write this book?
That book took me 6 years to write, partially because until recently I was a long-distance truck driver.
Oh.
So I... jokingly, I always say they frown on having a keyboard on the steering
on
wheel.
Yeah.
But no, I was away from home a lot as a long-distance driver, so the best I could do was take notes at night and wait till I get home and write. And then when I was home, I wasn't home that long. So it took me 6 years to write that.
Wow. Well, it really moves along. Like I said, I started to read it, and then Jean can attest to that. I was just every night reading, and I couldn't sleep one night, and I got up, and I finished the whole thing around 3 o'clock in the morning. I was just reading and reading. So are you still writing today? Are you working on something else?
I am. I have a second book that is into the, I've sent to a publisher.
Oh.
And I'm anxiously awaiting the response.
And is that another mystery? Is it a fiction?
No, this is a deviation from what my usual writings are. This is a promise I'm keeping to a person. I made a promise 20 years ago, and I'm keeping that promise. Mm-hmm. And this book hopefully will get published. My third book is the sequel to Lake of Hidden Secrets. And that is in the process of being written right now.
Wow.
So hopefully that will be ready by, I would say, May or June of next year.
That's interesting. And so do you write every day these days? Like, do you write at the same time? They say that's the best thing.
Well, I'm sort of a rebel, I guess, because no, I don't write at the same time. Sometimes I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and write. Sometimes I write at 7 o'clock at night, but usually it's in that quiet nighttime when the world goes quiet is when I like to write.
And I was going to ask you too. Whenever I talk to people, look, there's a lot. Everybody, you meet a lot of people that want to be writers, but they just can't. They can't write, you know. And the answer always seems to be, if you want to be a writer, just write. And I guess I don't have to ask you if you enjoy writing, because you clearly do. You just, it's not an agony for you to sort of get the written word down on paper. It's just...
No, it's just fun doing it. You write, and fiction is a different type of book. When you start writing a fiction book, eventually it takes on a life of its own. And you want a character to go left, but they're going to go right no matter what you say.
That's interesting.
you just sort of got to go
you
with
let
the
them
flow.
Come to life. That's what I was going to ask you too. I have a few notes here just so I wouldn't get lost, but I found your characters were, I almost felt like they were people that I could know. Like, they weren't sort of, you know, sometimes they're too fictional, or you think, well, that person couldn't possibly exist. Like, they were real people with real struggles, and people surprising, and but not, you know, they weren't phonies. They felt like real people that you could meet around here. And I know I was saying it's set in Canada, and she goes into Quebec, so it's it was. I mean, the character development is often such a big challenge when you talk about writing, but for you, it just, if you let the kind of character speak for themselves.
You have to let the character, your old cliche, go with the flow. And actually, there's one or two characters, minor characters in there that I hadn't even thought of, but suddenly here they were. You know, I either had a car there that somebody had to get into, or I had
That's what I was going to say. When you're writing these books, when there's lots of pieces of the story that have to fit together, I would be worried about leaving something out. Like they always say, you know, make an outline of your book so that you don't leave some clue dangling back about three chapters. But did you keep all that in your head, or did you kind of keep notes to remind yourself what you had to tie up?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
A little bit of both. I'm not one to make a detailed outline. I make a rough outline and then go from there.
Right. And is that, what advice would you give to somebody that was wanting to write a book? Would you tell them to
write? My instructor told me to write an hour a day, which is impossible. There are days you can't write. Mm. But write. And if you can't write about the story you're writing about at this time, start another one. And then two or three days later, you'll get back to the original one.
Mm-hmm.
But just write something, write anything, and eventually it'll fall into place. I had the climax written in this book long before I had the sixth chapter written.
Wow.
You know, then I had to modify it at the end, but just write.
Right. So you took some writing, a bit of writing courses, or
I took some writing courses for sure.
And were they for fiction, or was it writing in general?
No, it was writing in general. Writing in general. I had writers that were my published authors that were my mentors, and I went through a college that, of course, I couldn't attend the college personally because of my trucking, but so it was more or less an online thing. But it was very good. It's a very reputable college, and I had mentors that were
Isn't that good?
Qualified authors, and they instructed me very well.
And so when you had finished writing your book, what did you do, a lot of rewriting, or what did it pretty much come out as it is for you?
I edited that book about 12 times before I ever sent it to an editor.
How do you go back over it? I do writing here at the paper, and I hate reading my own stuff over too many times. I just get so impatient with it.
I'm the type of guy that I want to send it to the editor, but I don't want the editor to find anything wrong.
Right.
So I keep going over it to find it. And they still find a bunch of stuff wrong. But
yeah.
So
who's the first person to read your book? Do you give it to your wife, or if friends that you let read it, or do you just prepare it, keep it from everybody? And like,
I'm fortunate in that I have my wife, who is a very good reader and can sort of give me direction in it, and I have a sister who is qualified. She worked as a like an editor.
Okay.
But in a different genre. She worked, like, she would correct speeches and different things, but she also reads them before, as I'm going along, chapter by chapter.
And when they read this one, did they tell you to change anything, or did they just say,
no, they
that's
didn't
great.
Tell me to change anything. They just corrected my little mistakes.
Okay.
And said it was a good book.
So, well, that must have felt good. You must have...
Oh, it always feels good when somebody tells you you're doing something right.
Louise, can I jump in for a second?
Sure.
You asked this question earlier, but I think it just got distracted from the answer.
Yeah.
Do you have favorite authors, especially mystery writers that you sort of followed and were inspired by? Sherlock, you know, like Arthur Conan Doyle or O. Henry, or Any of the Guy de Maupassant or something? I'm just curious.
Well, my favorite writers are, yeah, I have, I just got a block there. Patterson.
Oh, yeah, Susan. No, it's not. It's. I know who you mean. Yeah. Well, what are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm between books because I've been running around a lot. I just came back from the Toronto International Book Fair, and
that's right. You were telling me that you're going out. How did that go?
Oh, that went really well. Yeah, really well. I totally enjoyed it.
Lots of people there, eh?
Lots of people, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Did you get a good response to your book?
I got a good response to the book.
Excellent.
And I got met some publishers and everything, so it was very well.
Fantastic.
Very well,
yeah.
What exactly, I know I've heard about, I know what book fair, what happens at a book fair? Do you try to pitch your book to publishers? Do you try to meet publishers that might want to publish future books? Or is it, it's not for the general public, is
it?
Yeah.
All the book publishers and everything, they all get together, and it's just a... gigantic fair, like the farmer's market, only it's a gigantic fair just for books, and people come in and buy books. And but at the same time, you have authors going up and doing readings, and you are
that would be fun.
Interviews and everything else, and it goes on for a weekend.
Wow!
But it's all about books.
That would be great. And I wanted to ask you too. When you were writing this book, are there people, like, did you use people that you know to make, I guess everybody always asks you that, but like,
I cannot tell a lie, of course.
Were you kind of glued parts of different people together to
yes.
get, I mean, I,
yes.
the
For
main character
characters.
In there was so likable. I mean, she was yes. a really, and she wanted to do a lot of good, and she cared a lot about people too,
yes.
you know.
Yes, so. But she's not... she's not referred, like, I didn't refer to my mother in that as
no.
that character.
No.
But, yes, there is a certain person that is that character.
Yeah.
But...
And do you show up in the book somewhere? Do you make a cameo appearance?
No.
Okay.
If I did make a cameo appearance, I would say that I love driving Trans Ams. But that's not me.
Okay.
No.
Interesting. Or a truck driver, maybe, or something?
Yeah, no.
And so I wanted to ask you, too, what would you say has surprised you about sort of becoming a published author? What did you not know?
Well, I didn't know that I'd be doing what I'm doing now, like going to markets and selling books and meeting all sorts of people. And I thought I'd just be sitting home writing books, and you know, they'd be going out to stores and on the e-books, and that would be it. But I didn't know it would be so much fun, and that I'd be going out and meeting all these people.
Right.
That's.
And I didn't ask you too, and I meant to right off the top is, I always ask to start off and I say, what brought you here to Van Cleek Hill? How long have you been living here?
Well, I don't really live here. I live in Maxville.
Right. Well, the area then.
To the area. I just love the area. I moved from Ottawa, Gatineau, to Castleman when I met my wife. And she was from the Castleman area. And then we found a home that we liked in, actually not far from the 138. We live in the country.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
So
we
bought the country home, and, we just moved in there. We just love it. And then, I heard about the farmer's market in Van Cleek Hill, and I've been coming to Van Cleek Hill. And I just love Van Cleek Hill.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful town.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for coming in so very much. And I also want to mention that Roland will be here at the Review this Friday evening to sign his book and talk about it. And I have a feeling I'd like to talk to him more about his book, but I don't want to give too much away. So it's a real a real privilege to get to meet you and to have read your book. I'm looking forward to seeing what you come up with next.
Thank you very much.
And where can we find your book for sale in the region? I should also maybe let you tell us that.
In the region? Well, you can find it right here at the Review. You can find it at any of your local bookstores. You go in and they can order it for you. And you can find it online at any of the e-readers or any of the...
Okay. You've got... It's out in a form of a Kindle or whatever?
Yes, Kindle, Kobo, whatever.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Roland. And thank you, Louise, for that interesting interview. And we're going to go to another cut of music from the Imaginary Heaven CD.
can trade stories about it and secret love. Maybe you can help me recall. I can't remember when the snow felt so good. I'm running through the fields with you. It's a magic time, it's a magic time. And I can't remember when the snow felt so good. I'm running through the fields with you, and I've got my woolly mittens on, and the fence have marshmallow caps on, and the pine trees are so tall I can't even see the top of them, and I feel so small and safe in the winter time. Sometimes we forget what beautiful is. Sometimes we forget what beautiful means. I follow the animal tracks down to the river, and it's frozen, and it looks like painted glass in the sunshine. And I put my ear against the ground, and I listen to the born under deep blue winter.
two cuts from Imaginary Heaven, CD called Christmas Comes in Darkness. We just heard, Sleep Holy Child, cut 8, and then cut 9, What It's Like to Be Born in the Wintertime. Beautiful, haunting melodies. I really like this CD. And we're really fortunate. It's limited edition. It came out in 1997, but Ian Hepburn, who is featured on this CD, he plays the Celtic harp, brought in a supply of them that he had stashed away and is offering them for sale here at The Review as a fundraiser for the Healing Harps and Restorative Drums program at PCPS. So come into The Review and ask for this by name, Imaginary Heaven, wonderful Christmas CD, Christmas Comes in Darkness, and you'll be in for a treat. Very reminiscent of the Lorena McKennett kind of sound of Celtic harp and drums and really nicely produced CD. Anyway, almost 20 years old, but still very, very attractive and up-to-date and a nice CD. Make a great gift for somebody, and you just can't get it anywhere else. They're not existent. That's it for this week for Van Cleek FM. Louise and I were really happy to bring you community events and a couple of guests. Phil Arbor came in and told us all about the Christmas Craft Show and the Parade of Lights. And Rainey Marks came in and told us all about the second annual edition of Art Scramble taking place at Arbor Gallery this weekend. And then Roland Roberts came in and talked to him about his book, Lake of Hidden Secrets, that he wrote. And Louise read and interviewed him about. So a really fun and interesting show to bring you this week. Plus, we covered all of the big events happening in and around Van Cleek Hill. So it was a fun show to bring you. And now we're going to make room for Sean Cooley and Van Cleek Cooley coming up in a couple of minutes. The final cut from the Imaginary Heaven CD, Christmas Comes in Darkness. It's cut 10. And thanks for joining us, folks. And we'll talk to you next week. Stay tuned for Sean Cooley and Van Cleek Cooley in a couple of minutes. Bye for now.